seeing this thinking, and then the accumulations. I mean, not then means after seeing, then already the accumulations show how, but basically seeing this thinking for everyone. But what, how each one thinks is depend on the accumulations.
And acts?
That's accumulations. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's accumulations.
So at those moment one understand what citta and cetasikas are working. No one. But while you are talking and we watch and we can understand citta's
behavior, which is just conditioning actions all the time and speech.
But usually when forget about this one and thinking about the other citta's and accumulations.
Usually watching the show and just forgetting all about what is conditioned, what kind of thinking it is. Kusala, oh, I kusala at this moment.
That's quite minor, or kusala and nasal, or kusala.
And sometimes the show is about the watcher watching the show. Right? It's not really understanding the citta.
And at moment of thinking about the other citta, it's not the understanding of one's own citta at that very moment. Even right now.
As soon as it's an idea of me and them, then already lost in papancha and proliferations and ideas of people, not understanding anything about seeing now or hearing or anything else at this moment. How did you find the discussion yesterday, Helen?
It was good, and there's a lot to take in, but everything that we talked about yesterday, it is applied onto our daily life, though. So I do find it, you know, it's very useful because it's applied onto our daily life. And I think this Buddha teaching is it's kind of like a lifetime learning. You can't actually just like learn this teaching, you know, for like this sort of period of time, because I don't think there, I feel there is actually no such things that you just learned it for a period of time. It has to be, you know, like our lifetime, because even though like every day there may be something that we learn something new in under different conditions. And so I just felt that actually it's good to, although actually I'm actually a very beginner, but I feel that it's actually good that I have this opportunity, you know, to enjoy and to listen to this talk. Yeah.
And you mentioned like this morning about other teachers coming to Hong Kong like this weekend to teach about the theory, but also teach a meditation practice or technique, and how this is quite popular and you're encouraged to join these kind of sessions. So what do you think about that now?
Actually, the teacher coming this weekend is more about meditation, because I never met this Burmese teacher, and I have actually no idea exactly which method that he's teaching, because from what I know is like some of the meditations they teach like basically they teach, you know, to cultivate your loving kindness or compassions. But these teachers are coming this weekend because actually, you know, through our, you know, mutual friends, and she's organizing actually a one-day meditations. But yeah, this Sunday one, I don't know. But actually next weekend, there is actually another teacher that actually is coming. He's actually looks after the Gunyin Monastery in Vancouver. So he's actually a Chinese monk, and he has been traveling between Vancouver and Hong Kong though. So he is giving a talk about, but his teaching is a bit more similar, you know, Buddhist teaching, but it's also, you know, based on the Buddhist philosophies. But he taught in Cantonese and I think his English as well too. So, yeah, because I have actually attended his talk before and it's actually very useful. And it's also, you know, like, is, yeah, it is about, you know, the Buddhist, you know, philosophies.
About last night a little bit was the metta, the loving kindness, and you mentioned that one or two of the teachers, they teach on retreats about metta or developing metta, but the point is, what about in daily life, like in your work or here or when one's with other people? There are so many opportunities for kindness, so what is the purpose of going to a special quiet room and concentrating on the idea of metta instead of just developing it when one's with people naturally?
Personally, I haven't really gone for a proper retreat because it was 5 years ago that, you know, I went for a retreat and then I only went for 4 days because a worker only can do 4 days. But it's kind of like, I think the method that they teach is to cultivate actually compassions. Because I think it's actually, because I shouldn't be speaking anything about meditation because I don't know the meditation too well myself. But this is actually just based from, you know, what was teach is actually is to kind of like, you know, cultivate compassion. Because, yeah. Thank you.
So what we discuss here is how these qualities can be developed in daily life. And I think you understand that already. Right. Helen, I think, has already explained that she goes along to talks but doesn't go to meditation-type retreats or do meditation practice herself.
I think it's helpful to understand more about these dharmas in daily life, like we've been talking about seeing now, visible object, metta at this moment, when there's a little more understanding of what is wholesome and not wholesome and how it's not one's metta. So that one can see that no point or purpose in going to a special place or sitting in a special way trying to have such qualities, because now if we understand more about the quality of kindness and friendliness and how it's different from attachment and it's not one's own friendliness, no need to wait or go to a special place. Yeah.
No, sure. Yeah, because I agree that, because actually, like, this Dharma talk actually is more applying to our daily life. And, yeah, because there's so many things that, you know, happen on daily, basically, and also, you know, throughout our lifetime, right? So I find that, you know, like, this talk actually, to be honest, is very useful, and it's useful for everyone, you know, who listen to this talk, though.
Now, so no point thinking about having such wholesome qualities another time, or no point regretting about what happened yesterday or how there was the lack of patience 5 minutes ago, because it's all gone. So it all comes back to understanding that there is just the world now, one world at a time, world of what is seen, world of what is heard, world of thinking for a moment, and then completely gone. And because this is a little superficial, then one has to go deeper and deeper to understand more about what is true and real at this moment. So yesterday we were talking about how there are just those dharmas which can experience an object, cittas and cetasikas, moments of consciousness and the mental factors, and those dharmas which cannot experience anything, the rupas, such as visible object or sound, so that by understanding in more detail, it becomes clearer and clearer that no one who can do anything, no one who can control life at all, that each of these dharmas arises now by conditions and falls away instantly. So the point of it all is for there to be the understanding and detachment from the idea of someone who can control life or make things arise at will or do anything at all.
So, is there any different point going to meditation center and listening to the teachings?
For me, it's sick because I haven't really actually do meditation. It's just because of, you know, my husband go, so I just tag along. So I haven't really gone for a meditation retreat. Yes.
Not knowing what meditation is, but you still went.
Yeah, I just went with my husband. So and you see, I kind of like, I know a little bit of meditation, but I can't really, you know, speak for anything about meditation because I don't know enough, okay, you know, to speak for anything about meditation. But the reason why I go is like, I know this is actually not a harmful thing. So I know it's still, I mean, basically, actually, it's still good. So, yeah, I'm not like against, you know, meditations or, you know, anything. Because I do believe, you know, meditation is to help. I mean, in certain way, is actually it still help, you know, to certain people. I think to me,
meditation center is very harmful.
Harmful.
Yes, okay. Very, very harmful.
Not only does it not help, but it harms.
Okay. Yeah. But in what way do you feel it's actually it's harmful?
This is the difference between listening to the teachings and going to meditation center.
Okay.
Those who go to meditation center know nothing about the truth and about meditation. Like you went with, you said, just a little bit of understanding meditation. I'd like to understand what you mean by a little bit.
Yes.
Understanding about meditation.
Basically, when you go to the meditation center, right, and then you need to be quiet and...
Okay.
Yeah.
What for?
I think they want you to concentrate or to focus of your mind.
What for?
I guess so that you know. I think probably it's more focusing and paying attention. I think actually it's to build up your awareness so that you can focus on do one thing because like, nowadays, you know, people, they got 10 tasks they need to do in one day. But you need to be aware of what you are doing in order to get the job done right.
Can you do without going to meditation center?
Yeah, sometime ago.
So why go?
That's why I haven't really properly gone for a meditation center.
Yeah.
I've been to a meditation center, but I haven't actually physically sit in and meditate. So
and what did that person, it might be master or teacher or whoever, taught you? What did they teach you?
No, because that I really don't know.
At all?
No, because what, I mean, that I really don't know. But what happened was, from what I've heard, is like when you go for the meditation and every day, they have actually an interview, right?
We don't talk about the others because they don't know anything. If they do know, they'd never go to that place or anywhere that didn't give any understanding at all. Just to be told to do, to concentrate, to walk.
Not necessarily, because actually, if I'm not wrong...
What did they teach you?
So basically, it's just because of, I haven't actually sit in for, you know, to meditate with the group, right? So based on what I know is like, they sit for the meditation and then every day they have an interview. It could be individual or group interview and then you need to report your interview to the teacher.
Your interview.
Yes, to report to the teacher and so you need to let the teacher
know.
No,
I mean when you went there. You had to report to your teacher.
What is your experience that you report?
I never report anything because I never went.
I see.
Yes, because I never went for meditation.
So we don't talk about the others. Just talk about you. What did you get?
Because I never went to. Because I never report anything. Because I never went to meditation. I never.
She just went to the center.
To meditate.
She
I think
went to company her husband.
She just
yes.
Her husband is the meditator.
Yeah, because.
And you didn't attend anything at all? Not at all?
I see.
So you can do that. You can go to meditation center without listening and doing anything. So why did she go?
By Ben Pung.
Yes, but to where?
Did you speak in English?
To where? That place? What is that?
You went to the meditation center, but you didn't take part in any
of
the meditation activities.
Yes, I think I get it all. I think probably you guys got mixed up because
I never went to meditate, but it's just because my husband went to meditate at a meditation center. So the time I went to the center, it just to meet my husband. That's it. And then I never done any meditation. So I never sit in a Dharma hall and then to do meditate. I never done that.
So you mean that you can visit your husband at meditation center?
After the retreat, not during the retreat. Because sometimes they might be in a retreat, you know, for like a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. But I cannot see him during when he is actually in the retreat. But I meet him after when he finished the retreat,
so you went to see
so
him.
So I just asked my husband what he does. So this is what I know of, but I have never experienced meditation myself. So that's why I can't really speak for meditation. Mm-hmm. So
she can only report what he says.
Fortunate.
She did say she thinks meditation is useful.
And I think that it's harmful.
But she doesn't do it herself.
But how do you know that it's useful?
Well, I guess, just from from what I hear, right, as I said, to my understanding is actually the meditation is actually to help you to... I really shouldn't be speaking about anything about meditation because this is actually just my view and then it could be completely wrong. So, yes. Meditate is actually to help you focus, concentration, and then, basically to cultivate your awareness. Because as I mentioned, nowadays, we do thousands of things, probably we do 10 things at one time, but when we are doing things, if we pay more attention to it or we are aware of what we are doing, then we should able to perform better than, This is just my view. So it may be completely wrong, but this is just my view. Yeah.
Or your own imagination about meditation center.
My own imagination?
About meditation center because you know nothing about meditation center.
Yes.
You just think.
Not just think, but just this is what I've been hearing from people that, they do meditations. And I have I have a couple books too about the meditations that I have been reading it a bit. So, yeah.
Let me just ask this question.
Do you think what you hear about meditation ties in with what we've been discussing the last day or so about understanding realities at the moment?
I think it's different, but I feel, this Dharma talk is more applied onto our daily life. I kind of feel it's a bit more useful than perhaps just sitting for meditation, because if you sit in for meditation, it's very difficult for me, to say about meditation because I don't. But, based on this talk, based from what we talked about yesterday, personally, I find that this is very useful because this applied onto our daily life. And, that helps, everyone. So this is what I find.
And when there's an idea of
focusing, you mentioned about focusing. What is the purpose of focusing? like you mentioned before about being in a quiet place and focusing. I know this is not what you follow, but this is what you encourage or believe to be useful for other people who can do it. So what is the purpose of focusing?
I guess it's actually just more awareness of what you're doing, because, you know, sometimes actually just for example, I just give you an example. If we are walking on the street, you know, sometimes, you know, there is actually some pavement. It might be slightly a little bit, you know, off or up. If you don't pay attention to what you're doing, then you will be easily, you know, you fell over or, you know, something like this. Or let's say, for example, you're chopping, like let's say when you're in the kitchen, right, when you're doing your cooking, and then you're chopping, but if you don't pay attention, you can easily get cut on your fingers. So, like, yeah, I think it's just more awareness and more, not concentrate, or basically you know what you're doing.
So what about the value of this?
Sorry, that's not a mic. If you can give me that, I'll take it off the table.
So when you say this way is useful for daily life, what do you mean? You think that you may end up cutting your finger, but that doesn't matter. You have other benefits? I mean, that helps you not to cut your finger.
Right.
And this is not meant for that, but for something else. So what is that something else?
Like for this talk, right, it's talk about everything that we experience and then seeing and, yeah, seeing, even touching. And so it's not just, well, basically this, okay, it's not just about awareness, concentration. It's kind of like anything, you know, on a daily.
What, awareness or what daily?
Not just awareness, like, you know, when Achin was saying that earlier, one start talking and then all the others actually are following, you know, the talks, right? So, you know, we have been paying attention. Oh, one start talking a conversation and the others actually will start, this is actually like, I think, you know, this, how do I say it?
No, I think Achin was at that time not talking about how the different people interrupt and...
Right.
She's just talking about how each moment is conditioned
by
the accumulations, by habitual tendencies, and how we are all different in a way.
Yes.
I think that was...
Actually, those moments, there are citta cetasikas arising and falling to condition such and such acts and deeds and speech. So instead of thinking about who's talking, we think about the citta of each one at that very moment.
Achin usually tells us to try and understand, well, not try, but to, there should be an understanding of what the words really mean. So in this case, what do we mean by awareness? Now, when you talk about awareness, you talk about concepts, being aware of a glass, being aware of some holes in the street, being aware of all these different conceptual things, like we mentioned about concepts and realities yesterday. But awareness is not being aware of a concept. Okay? Awareness is an awareness of a reality. So what realities would there be awareness of when awareness arises?
Would there be at So basically that would be at the present moment of what's happening.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. Awareness.
It's not the same as being aware of, let's say, a crack in the street.
Yes.
That's a concept.
Yes.
This is being aware of reality.
It is a reality of what's happening at this moment.
What is arising right
yes.
now.
Well, when you say awareness of what's happening, it's not really that, because what's happening is a story. Right, so what's happening now is having a Dhamma discussion. Excuse me. But what the Buddha taught was that there are realities, absolute realities arising and falling away that can be directly experienced regardless of the activity that's being carried on. So we talked yesterday about seeing invisible object. So whatever one is doing, whatever the activity, they're still seeing invisible object. Hearing and sound, they're still experiencing through the body sense, and they're still thinking, and they're still wholesome and unwholesome mental states, and they're still feeling, for example. So it's these realities that are the object of awareness rather than anything related to the conventional activity or situation. Right. But just to pick up on your comment about people who go to meditation centers, I don't think they go in order to avoid cutting their finger when chopping vegetables. I think they're after something more than that. So this comes back to the point that Ajahn was raising about whether it's helpful or harmful. Because there must be an idea of spiritual progress of some kind or other. Otherwise, why would they go, right? Yeah. So it's this point that would be a point of concern, because if one is undertaking a practice that one believes to be related to spiritual progress, but if in fact one is misconceived in one's assumptions about the nature of reality, then the practice cannot lead to the development of understanding. It can lead to other things. It can lead to experiences. It can lead to apparent calm. It can lead to seeming suppression of unwholesome tendencies, but it cannot be the path that the Buddha taught if there's no understanding of these realities about which the Buddha taught. So that's why the person undertaking a practice is doing more harm than the person who's completely ignorant of any idea of spiritual progress, as it were, and they might be interested in being a better person, but not in doing any kind of practice for that purpose.
And when you talk about, well, you said yesterday we learned that we're conscious of this, and here you're talking about focusing on that. But again, it's an idea of someone who can do it, someone who can follow a spiritual practice. But actually, there isn't anyone at all. There are just these conditioned dharmas. And when there's an idea of focusing on an object or concentrating on an object, it's motivated by strong desire to somehow catch or know or be aware of that object or that reality or that movement while walking or sitting or eating or something like that. So it's actually a very strong, deep-rooted idea of self that can do something. And what we learn is that concentration arises at every single moment, and it can be wholesome or unwholesome, but at the moment of focusing or trying to catch, it's actually not the wholesome concentration that arises with moments of generosity or sila, like we discussed yesterday, or moments of understanding. So it's actually concentration with strong attachment to that moment, wishing to be aware, trying to be aware, trying to have more awareness, but not actually understanding what awareness is or what concentration is or what the reality is that can be known. So because it's motivated by very strong attachment to getting a result or having a spiritual practice, it just leads to more attachment and more wrong practice. And instead of following the right path, one is actually following the wrong path. So that's why it's dangerous, because one would like to get closer to the Buddha and the Buddha's teachings, but actually it's taking one away because it's motivated with that wrong idea that I can focus or I can somehow catch reality. That's why the study has to begin with the understanding of what reality is and different kinds of realities, so that it becomes clear there really isn't anyone who can do anything. And as the others have said, what you consider to be the object of awareness, like while chopping vegetables or walking on the street, has nothing to do with reality, because it's just an idea, not actually understanding seeing or hardness or the reality that makes up life now.
And they can have their fingers chopped because they didn't do anything. And they just sit doing nothing. No understanding of what Buddha taught at all about realities. So it's dangerous, harmful to the understanding of realities.
Helena, this is Jagrit and his wife Al, good friends from Bangkok. Helena is a friend of ours from Hong Kong. She just came over.
Once Kun Jagrit had meditation at his house, like meditation center.
Bangkok meditation center.
Not long time ago, about how many years?
3 or 4 years.
3 or 4 years.
But you're not doing that. So basically, you don't do meditation center now. Not many more.
Yes, we dissolved the the premises already. After I listened to the right understanding from Thanachan, that is a wrong practice, wrong concentration.
Yes.
And I do that almost maybe probably more than 10 years of meditating, 10 years of wasting time. Because no understanding at all.
No. Okay.
Only clinging to calmness.
Okay.
That's the only thing that happened.
You're right, yes. I think
this is some of the people that you're looking for is calmness.
Yes.
You mean that's what one of the things that put you off, and that's why you hesitate joining, because you see how others appear to be attached to the practice. Is that what you're saying?
No. I know some people, they go for meditation, it's actually just trying to get some calmness, right? But it just...
Okay, just for me, you know, right from day one, when I try to sit, I basically I can't sit. You know, when they talked about, you know, like rising and falling, I couldn't do it. Basically, they tried to explain, and then they were actually like teaching, you know, to scan your body, and I don't get it. I can't get it. So basically, that's why, you know, like, no, you know, this is actually just not. I mean, I don't want to force myself, you know, to do something that I'm not into it, because okay, it's fine. If I can do it, I do it. If I don't, you know, if I can't do it, why should I force myself, you know, to learn something that actually, like, I can't do it? So it just, that's the reason why I never gone for a meditation retreat.
Yeah. And I think the interest in calmness is due to a belief that the development of the path is all about having less unwholesome moments. So that calmness means that one doesn't react to the sense door experiences. I mean, this is the way of thinking that some people have, that if they can remain of even temperament, not being excited by what they see or hear, or not having either attachment or aversion to what they see, hear, and taste and experience through body sense, that this is somehow progress in personal development or development of the path. Whereas we understand that what the Buddha taught was about understanding realities, and that ultimately nothing can really eradicate accumulated tendencies, like and dislike and aversion and so forth, except an understanding of the way things truly are, because it's our ignorance of the unsatisfactory nature of these realities that makes us cling to them and want more and to continue life as we know it.
And the question is, what is
calmness? Because when someone goes for a walk in the countryside or walk along by the lotus flowers and everything seems very peaceful and there's pleasant feeling, it seems so calm. But is it really calm, or is it attachment at that moment? Because if there's attachment, however subtle, there's no calmness. So calmness is another mental factor that just arises with kusala, wholesome cittas, like at moment of dana or sila or moment of understanding. So like now, when there's a moment of understanding that only visible objects seen, at that moment the citta is calm without trying to make it calm or looking for calm. And no matter whether busy in what, when you're busy in your work, but you're helping your colleague with kindness, at that moment the citta is calm. But when one just sits quietly and tries to focus and it seems very calm, actually it's attachment. It's not calm. It's not true calm at that moment.
People who meditate and are attached to the particular practice, they fail to see, because I'm sure they have moments of kusala in daily life, like dana, sila, yet they do not realize that the calm that comes in kusala in daily life, that's the calm, and they mistake lopa for calm, so that makes it dangerous. So you end up taking what is not wholesome for wholesome and not understanding what wholesome is at all.
Like when one's on holiday at the
seaside or in the forest and there's no work problems and everything is quiet and everyone is pleasant and seems very peaceful and calm. But actually, it's just ignorance and attachment most of the time, because no understanding at all.
They also think that calm, but their version of calmness, it will lead to the development of jhana. And they believe that if you reach a certain stages of jhana, this will automatically allow understanding. You can reach a stage where understanding will start to develop. They think it's a condition for understanding, but as we've been saying, it's not at all a condition for understanding, because it's still rooted in akusala things rather than kusala. So it's like the desire to have, oh, I just want this lovely scene around me with the countryside or whatever it is. And that's an attachment that is basically akusala.
So we understand the value of knowing what are the realities of the present moment. And attachment is one of them, of course, but not the only one by any means. In fact, there's probably a lot more attachment than we realize, because once it's pointed out, it's obvious that even the present moment of seeing brings with it attachment. We want to continue seeing, even if it's not a particularly pleasant object, just a normal one, but there's still attachment arising. after moments of seeing, but we're not aware of it because it's just the norm, just a mild level of attachment throughout the day. So we understand that instead of selecting particular realities to be aware of, such as wholesome or unwholesome mental states, that any reality arising can be and is taken for self, with an idea of self or of being an object or something, and is to be understood according to the Buddha's teaching. So that's why we keep coming back to the same old things, because all day there is seeing invisible object and yet it's not known as it truly is. There's always a story going on about it rather than the direct understanding of it. And of course there cannot be continuous direct understanding. It's a very momentary thing because it is the wisdom of which the Buddha taught. But one has to hear about these things first and consider them over and over. And as you said, it's a lifetime journey, and it's a multi-lifetime journey, in fact. But take your point that it's not something that one just hears and, okay, I got it, thanks, and then you're off on your own. Yeah, so seeing an invisible object, hearing and sound, experiencing through the body sense, thinking about it, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling.
So one can forget about the idea of
being aware of, well, chopping the vegetables or going for a walk, because even without a Buddha's teachings, people have the idea of being aware in those situations. Conventionally, we all know what's meant. And as you say, you teach children to be careful cutting the vegetables so they don't cut themselves. But it has nothing to do with the development of wholesomeness. It has nothing to do with the development of understanding, nothing to do with the development of sati, awareness, because sati can only arise with wholesome cittas. So when chopping the vegetables, if it's not a moment of dana or sila or understanding, then it's akusala. So no sati at those moments, however much focus or concentration or conventional awareness there is.
Is there calm now? Who knows? It's only the idea that at moment of listening and try to understand that it's not attachment, but it's the interest of understanding reality. So there must be calm at that moment because citta is wholesome, but the characteristic calmness doesn't appear. Why?
Because it's just your own feeling of your calmness.
It's still you.
Yes.
So how can there be the moment of experiencing calm as calm, not I, or not anything? No matter how much we talk about realities right now, like citta, citta-sikas, and rupa, it's not the moment of directly experiencing with awareness. So awareness is not, you used to think about as I am aware of I'm doing what. That is not kusala. So it cannot be awareness itself. And anyone who goes to the meditation center, does he have right understanding enough to think that he can have awareness of this and that? Because at moment of going, there's no awareness. No understanding enough to be conditions for awareness to arise. So what we take for awareness is not right awareness at all. It's not awareness. It's only attachment to what I'm doing. I'd like to understand this. I try, but still no understanding of what is the object of moment of focusing. If one thinks that awareness is like focus on an object, but no understanding of what object at all. just ignorance is there, and ignorance cannot understand anything. Wishing, hoping, thinking that it understands, but actually, no understanding. So the person who goes to the meditation center believe in his master or his teaching, not understanding who's the Buddha at all.
And when you mention about it
being your feeling about calmness, but again, no one to have any feeling, and feeling is just pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So I think you mean it's just thinking about an idea of calmness, but even that thinking is not mine or anyone else's, just different moments of citta which arise and fall away and think about that object. Yeah.
So, Helena, can there be calm while shopping on a busy street?
Can be. Yes, can be.
No conditions.
So usually what we're very concerned
about in a day is pleasant feeling, having pleasant feelings. So if we're shopping in a busy place and there's a lot of traffic, but there's pleasant feeling, then we think that seems quite calm and everything seems quite okay. But actually it's still attachment with pleasant feeling. So pleasant feeling can arise with kusala or akusala, usually with akusala, like from the first moment we wake up and there's seeing and hearing, pleasant feeling with attachment. So calm only arises when it is a moment of kusala, such as moments of kindness or generosity, or like now when there's considering what is real, that only sound is heard at this moment, then the citta is calm. But at all the other moments, it's no calmness at all. So what people often take for calmness or focusing on calmness is actually pleasant feeling with attachment. And when it's the idea of my calm or my feeling of calm, it's wrong idea about oneself, clinging to oneself. So no calm at that moment, those moments. So the more we study, the more we realize actually a lot of what we took for being good or wholesome is just attachment and ignorance. And we find out there's more ignorance in a day than we ever imagined. So development of understanding is really the development of the realization of ignorance in a day.
So, if someone does not know those moments of calm in daily life, when there's kindness, there's compassion, can he be expected to have these developed by going to a meditation retreat?
The people who go there will listen to the teachings. And this is harmful.
Understanding of what's the teaching.
And can one say that before listening to the teachings, one just talk about anything without any understanding of what one talks about at all, like calm or practice or meditate or anything, like go, calm, I, no understanding of the realities at that very moment. And that cannot be understood while one is meditating at all. Because it's by one's own ignorance and one's own attachment and thinking. Is it harmful to go to somewhere without an understanding? And also with wrong understanding, that that is the way to develop the mental states.
And if they have a strong idea that this is the practice, or they think it's the Buddha's teaching about practice, they think the more the better, and then they may not be inclined to listen to any teaching about realities or the truth in daily life, because they think that is theory and they're only interested in practice. So they follow along their focusing or concentrating on some object, thinking this is practice, but actually no understanding at all. And then they become more and more cut off from daily life. They think they need to give up their household life or their work or their other responsibilities to have more time for practice. And instead of developing more calm and understanding, there's more and more agitation, more and more attachment, and life gets harder and more complicated and more intense. And this is when it's also dangerous.
Chakrit, you were saying you meditated for 10 years and you started doing it at home. Would it be correct to say that the frequency of sitting down and going to retreats and doing increased from the beginning? Maybe you did once a year, then you wanted to do twice and thrice, until in the end you had to do it at home because that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to meditate. You thought that if you don't meditate, then your life was chaos. You had to meditate. So it sounds like a person who meditates, who just develops more attachment to the practice, and as Sarah was saying, is incapable of handling daily life, isn't it?
Yes, that's the way it is. Because at first maybe you meditate once a day, but for me it's accumulating more and more, maybe 5 or 6 times a day for meditating. And when you're working and you feel, it's not feel bad, you seek the way to go to the room and meditate for an hour or something. So that's the bad result. Because in the day you cannot cope with the real situation happening around you. You try to avoid going to the room and meditate. However, you cannot meditate all day long. You have to get out and working and do many things in the day. So if you don't have any understanding, you will be always agitating when something wrong or when you don't like something. And you, again, you avoid that by going to the room and meditate. That cannot help. And yes, that's not possible in our life at all.
It's when you also start persuading your family members and other friends that this is how they should lead their lives. So actually you're teaching them wrong practice and encouraging them to follow the wrong way. So not only harming and damaging to oneself, but also to those one cares most about. One would like to help, but actually one's just causing them more and more trouble. Isn't that right?
If this, when I first started meditating, mine didn't last 10 years, it lasted just 8 months, 6 months maybe. And I said to myself, I thought to myself that I'm going to teach my son to do the same thing, my children to do the same thing.
Luckily for you, your children were so
ugly. They wouldn't listen to you.
With our conditions, it wouldn't happen at all, see? Because people just being attached to what they would like to have. Understanding, calm, and many things, but actually without understanding at all. So what's the best among all realities which are conditioned must be right understanding only.
And I think if it is one's
husband or those who one cares about, even if one's not interested, instead of thinking actually it's useful and encouraging, when one knows that it's harmful, then one can try to explain one's way of thinking, and one wouldn't wish to encourage one's family members to follow this way.
Right. Now, when we have understanding correctly, so we can persuade our family, friends, to understand what is the Buddha teaching, and it's a very right way. And I feel very happy now that I can let it go, let that go, and understand a little bit of the Buddha teaching, is feeling happy. And I think you can get the feeling of peaceful calm by a little bit understanding the reality happened to you right now. If you study more, listen more, understand more. That I think that's total different from the way that I practice meditation. Totally different. Because any moment you can be peaceful by a little bit understanding. But meditating, you have to try and take times. An hour or 2 hours, maybe not calm at all. That's so different.
Another thing that when people meditate is they think that there's a feeling of euphoria that comes along with the meditation, and they become attached to this feeling of euphoria, and they think they're having what's called piti, but it's not really piti because they're attached to it, and they want to have this experience of this so-called what they think is piti. Yeah, piti is a kind of a feeling of when kusala arises. Okay. It's a sensation, it's a feeling.
It's translated as joy.
Yeah.
It's a mental factor, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not a sensation or feeling, it's a mental factor, but it's accompanied by pleasant feeling.
Pleasant feeling,
but,
that's true.
Piti can be wholesome or unwholesome. Mm. So when you're having fun at the cinema, lots of piti, or when you're having fun in a conversation and chattering together, piti, but unwholesome piti.
So there's a, because they're attached to it, because there's an attachment to it. It's akusala rather than kusala, because you want to have that feeling again when you do the meditation. I know that was my experience when I was doing meditation. I wanted to have that feeling because it's a nice feeling. And I didn't realize that, at that time I didn't know any Dhamma, but I didn't realize that it was really more harmful. I was just creating more attachment rather than understanding what attachment was, and thereby being able to let go of disattachment. What can anyone do about understanding the teachings? What can anyone do? Can you help the others?
How?
Basically, you can if you understand this, okay, you can pass it on, you can spread it out, you know, to all your, you know, family, friends, and
to say the truth.
Yes.
To anyone.
Yes.
Who can consider.
Yes.
Yeah. And usually the truth is that there is, after seeing or hearing, there is attachment, not calm at all. Yeah. And usually when there's like focusing while chopping vegetables or studying anything or watching TV, usually akusala is much more, akusala of attachment, far, far more common than kusala.
The idea of meditation is usually associated with the religion, the Buddhism and all that. This, on the other hand, you can talk to anyone about, you know, you can, without saying that it's the Buddha's teachings, because it's life, it's daily life.
And just going back to the well-focused comment, one can be well-focused with akusala. Because people who, for example, want to do evil deeds like rob a bank or something need to be well focused. But so for us in daily life, when we need to focus on something, it's likely also to be akusala rather than kusala, because it's not the development. Concentration itself is not a wholesome factor. It's not like generosity or consideration or politeness or any of that. Concentration is, can we say, morally neutral, but it takes its moral quality from the consciousness that it accompanies. And I think a lot of people are mistaken about this because they think that jhana, for example, is the development of concentration, so they start by concentrating on an object. But really, samatha is the development of the calm that we've been discussing, the calm that arises with a moment of kusala, rather than the development of concentration. Although concentration does become a dominant factor when the calm has been developed to a high degree. So focusing on anything just because of our accumulated tendencies and our lack of understanding is bound to be unwholesome. Not that we need to not focus, but in the area of developing understanding and other wholesome mental states, if we start by focusing, then we're starting on the wrong foot.
So, John, in the case of jhana, it's more about having understanding about the value of calm, what is not calm, and then knowing which object can condition that calmness and how to increase it. Would that be it?
Well, I think we have to add also that it's correctly contemplating the object. So, for example, in the case of maranasati, reflection on death, it's correctly reflecting on death in a wholesome way. And obviously, when you think about it, death is not something you can focus on. So if we want to understand samatha correctly, we need to understand what it is that's common to all these objects, all 40 subjects, so-called subjects of reflection, that make up the objects that support jhana or access concentration. People pick out, say, breath or kasina because they're things they think can be focused on and concentrated on. But there's all the other subjects like peace and the Buddha and the teaching and death and metta and so forth. And it's the correct contemplation of the subject matter that supports the calmness that leads to the highly concentrated mind.
In other words, any kind of
bhavana or mental development has to begin with right understanding, no matter its development of calm or development of understanding of realities. It has to begin with right understanding, otherwise it'll just be self-concentrating or attachment or nothing understood, no awareness at all, no calm, no kusala at all.
In Kampi Visuddhimak, they said that jhana has to be together with understanding or panya. So how much of panya for practice the jhana? How much the person should have understanding about to practice right jhana, to practice right concentration?
Can attachment develop calm? No. So, who can develop? Anyone here? See? Without right understanding of what really is calm, it's impossible. Because it's a moment of understanding the danger of attachment to sensuous object. By now, we like this and that, the food, breakfast, and so on. Can that moment be a moment of developing calmness?
Impossible.
Not at all. So only the person who sees the danger of daily life, full of attachment all day long, from moment of waking up, opens one's eyes, going to bed, every moment can be object of attachment unknowingly. Strong or weak, it depends. So those who do not see the danger of attachment to sensuous object will never develop calmness at all. So one has to understand what condition, right development of calmness, not just want to be calm. Anyone who just want to be calm and try to read Visuddhimagga or the Buddhist teaching and try to follow without any understanding, not understanding or seeing the danger of being attached to sensuous object enough. That's why people in the Buddha's time, they did not develop calm after hearing the teachings. They developed right understanding of reality. And it depends on the individual's accumulation, because some have accumulation for understanding the danger of sensuous object enough. So they can go together, not by intention that I will practice calm before developing satipatthana or awareness to understand reality. So it all depends on understanding. Because people before the time of Buddha's enlightenment, they knew about the danger of attachment. But since they hadn't accumulated enough understanding of what's the way, so as much as they could do, it's only developing calmness until they attain the excess of calm to different degree, until it is first jhana, second jhana, that no need to talk about, because people today do not understand the way to develop calm because they have attachment. So they think that they have attained first jhana, second jhana, and some think that they have superpowers, but impossible, because even superpower cannot be done by ignorance.
So, Chan, can you say that the difference between someone who goes to a meditation retreat and ends up believing that he's developing calm, and someone who's never heard the Buddha's teaching and is just living the life of attachment to sensuous object, is that the meditator ends up just attached to some other object, sensuous attachment, but plus he has wrong understanding.
More dangerous.
More dangerous.
And what do you mean by...
You talked about understanding to practice jhana. What do you mean by practicing jhana?
Practicing is practical. General practicing, I mean to develop samatha, yes, to develop calm,
yeah,
and developing.
Because I think that developing, if one's talking about understanding in order for the development of calm up to jhana, that's one thing, but if there's an idea of practicing jhana, it sounds like the idea that someone can do something or follow some particular practice. So that's why it's actually about the development of understanding with calmness rather than practicing or doing jhana or something, because it's through the development of understanding and calm, no one who can do anything at all, that calm develops to that level if there are conditions, but never anyone who can practice or do it. To give Helen a little bit of a break, we had a little discussion about those four kinds of bhavana that Anne mentioned from your discussion in Laos. And I'd like Ajahn to explain a little bit more about it, if we can put it in fairly simple English so Helen and everyone can follow. So from your note, I've got Jagrit's note of the summary, you mentioned about bhavana of four kinds to enlightenment. One is sabba sambara bhavana, the development of all kind of kusala. Two is nirantara bhavana, continuous developing of kusala. Chirakala bhavana, endless developing of kusala. And sakaccha bhavana, developing with respect of kusala. Could you say a little more about these?
One by one. So the first one is...
Sabba sambara bhavana, the development of all kind of kusala. So we're talking about development of understanding, development of calm, and we talk about other paramis as support, like dana and nekama and so on.
Is this what is meant?
Buddha directly experienced the truth of reality. So at this moment, he taught that seeing is conditioned, so it arises and falls away. Is this very subtle right now?
Yes.
Who experienced that? But is it true? Is it true that seeing is conditioned to arise, just to see and then falls away? Only a moment. Is that true?
Yes. Shaking her head. At this moment, seeing
which sees what is seen. So the seeing which experiences what is visible, it arises for a moment, instantly falls away, never to return. Right? True? Yes.
Is it subtle?
No.
So you mean that it's easily directly experienced right now? If it's not subtle, who can directly experience the moment of the arising and falling away of seeing right now as it is? Nothing at all at moment of seeing. There is no hearing, no world, no thinking at all. Only that moment of that which is conditioned, so it arises, it sees and it falls away right now.
I think Helen is just being honest in saying it's not rising and falling away because it hasn't been experienced. So to the person who's never heard this...
But can you think about seeing right now that it's not hearing and the experiencing can arise just only one at a time? That's why the object which is seen or experienced can arise at a time. At moment of that which now is seen, it's not that moment of sound which is heard. They are different realities. They cannot appear together.
So we've said before that consciousness is momentary reality that arises and falls away. So what Ajahn is asking is it possible that seeing, although it appears continuous, is really just moments of consciousness arising very rapidly, intermingled with moments of hearing consciousness also arising very rapidly, but never the two at the same time, so that they both appear to be continuous.
This is the beginning of having one's own understanding, not the other's. Not by listening and belief, but by considering what is heard, whether it's right, whether it's true or not. For now there is seeing, know nothing about seeing, no attention, no interest in it, enough to consider what is real at moment of seeing. It's a reality, no one there. And at moment of seeing, there must be nothing in the world appearing. This is beginning to consider the teachings of the Buddha, to begin to understand and to see the Buddha. There is no other way to see him, but one can see him as a Buddha from his virtues, his great wisdom, his purity and compassion. Otherwise, no one hears about the seeing right now. So it's one's own considering that, is this true? Now seeing arises. If seeing does not arise, there wouldn't be seeing right now. So seeing is conditioned to arise. And as soon as it sees, it falls away. Very rapidly. Because it seems like there is hearing together simultaneously, but cannot be in a moment together. Is this true? Seeing sees. If it does not arise, there is no seeing.
Right. Yes.
And there cannot be anything which is seen as now. Is this true? Is this right?
Not right.
Like we were talking about yesterday, how there can
only be one moment of consciousness, one citta at a time. So a moment of seeing arises and it falls away. There's a moment of thinking about what is seen and it falls away. A moment of hearing arises and falls away. Each one is citta, one citta only at a time. So at a moment of seeing, there cannot be thinking or hearing at that moment. Just the world of what is seen appearing at that moment for an instant. Correct?
Yes.
Right, okay.
But when you say not true, it indicates the subtlety of the reality which arising and falling away, but not the direct experience. So people think that it's not true. But actually, think over and over it again and can begin to understand that at the moment of seeing, no one sees, only a reality, an element. This particular moment, not I, not anything, but that which is real. It is conditioned, so it arises and falls away. Is this true?
Yes.
That is the beginning of understanding the truth of just one reality. While there are so many, many realities in a day and in one's life, because that which has arisen, fallen away, will never return or will not to arise again. Just one moment in lifetime, in many, many lifetimes, never be the same. And this is the beginning to say the truth in order to become detached from clinging to it with ignorance and the idea of I see, because actually there's no I, but there are different realities unknown if there's no hearing the teachings at all. And this is the beginning to understand the truth of each moment as it is, not self.
I think the momentariness of consciousness is a difficult thing to grasp when we first hear it. And of course we can't verify it, because actually it's so fast that only developed understanding can see it. And Ajahn is not asking us to believe just because it was said by the Buddha or someone. But what she's saying is that we can at least consider whether it's consistent with our life as we know it, even though we start with an assumption, a belief perhaps even, that consciousness is continuous and it's the mind that's seeing and hearing and doing all these activities, rather than different moments of different kinds of consciousness arising at different doorways. But at least having heard it, we can consider whether it is possible by reference to the present moment. But it takes time.
I know. Yes. It's about thinking.
And when Ajahn asks, is it subtle?
By subtle, she just means, is this difficult to understand?
Oh.
Is it easy or difficult to understand? There is just a moment of seeing, not anyone who sees now. Just visible objects seen, nothing, no one seen. Not easy at all. Subtle, deep.
So from now, do you care or mind about calm?
Yeah. What do you care about?
Okay, so
just like this moment.
Okay, so Ajahn, we were talking about these four
kinds of bhavana, starting with sabba sambhara bhavana.
Because in a day there are uncountable moments of akusala from ignorance. So ignorance cannot understand anything at all. But at moment of wholesome moment, there are many, many wholesome mental factors arising together, perform their function. Like calm is there at that moment. But without enough right understanding, it's always me or I who's calm all the time. But when there are more and more kusala moments in the day, there cannot be conditioned for more akusala. That's why kusala should be in the day developed. Otherwise, it's impossible to have conditions enough to understand seeing as just a moment of experiencing an object. For example, even one question. And with the many, many moments of ignorance and akusala in a day, it hinder the time to think over it in order to see it. But when there are more moments of kusala at that moment, no ignorance, no attachment, so it can be conditioned to have less attachment. And all the teachings brings about less and less attachment. If one is courage to do something for oneself, it's not this what you call.
It's not the right way, not the right path.
Because actually it's just more akusala and the wrong path that's developing, and that means less and less opportunity for kusala. Because there will be more and more akusala. One will have the opposite of what one wishes for. One wishes to have more kusala and more calm in one's life. But what one gets is more akusala and more lack of calm, because actually it's not the right way, the right understanding.
that moment of being attached to things, sensuous object, is that moment calm? Attached to food, is that moment calm? Being attached, enjoy very much. Enjoying something, is it calm? No. So at moment of understanding, there is calm as well. No need to develop or try to have other kinds of calmness at all. See? That's why the kusala is the sattasampara bhavana. Sattasampara bhavana.
Sapa or
Sattasampara is conditions.
Sattasampara
is all kinds of kusala.
Uh-huh.
Can be ingredient or conditions for the development of understanding.
Mm.
Okay. With akusala, full of akusala each day, can that be condition, ingredient, to have right understanding?
No, because incidentally, just before you said that, I was thinking about akusala. Because you just, yes, I was thinking, because you just mentioned in context of akusala being hinder right kusala. Understanding. And I was wondering about, can we say all kinds of akusala hinder? So now you're saying that on the other hand, kusala is...
All kind of kusala.
Okay.
Just following up comment of Ajahn's for Helena, attachment to, say, food is not calm, is restlessness, but a moment of understanding of that attachment is calm. So we get to think of calmness as being like consciousness, momentary. So not a calm person or an uncalm person, but moments of calm are a condition for moments of calm later also. So it develops gradually that way, by developing kusala.
And can calm be known by appearance? This is the understanding. Not you. A reality which understands. Begin to see that realities are not self, not anyone at all. And with our conditions, hearing the right teachings is impossible to arise.
And cannot just tell by looking
from the outer appearance. Only Panya can know the citta at that moment, whether it's someone can look so peaceful and tranquil and calm, but it's just one speculation, no idea at all, because it depends on whether there's any understanding, any kusala at that moment. So the first type, Betty, is sabha sambara bhavana. Sabha referring to all, and it's referring to all kinds of kusala. And sambara, conditions or ingredients. So all kinds of kusala as conditions or ingredients for development of understanding. And even though any akusala can be the object of understanding, the point is that at moments of when there is no kusala, there is akusala. So in that sense, all kinds of kusala are a support or ingredient for development of right understanding of realities. But when people have the idea of they will do good or have good because it supports understanding, it's not kusala at all, because it's just the idea of I doing something. So having the idea I will develop metta, it's not metta, but at this moment when there's kindness for other people we're associated with, it is metta. So at that moment, it is the supporting kusala.
When there is the understanding will lead to whatever arises in daily life. Because it knows no self, there are moments of wholesome or unwholesome realities only.
also in daily life, if there's opportunity, we think in terms of metta, karuna, mudita, and sila, and all these. We think about these, but we don't think in terms of calm. But calm is there, but nobody thinks about calm.
And not in terms of no self.
And not in terms of no self also. But what I'm trying to say is that why the idea of calm even comes up for the meditator, you know. Because kusala, when we think about kusala, we think in terms of dana, sila, bhavana, right? We don't think, let's develop more calm, you know. When you meet a person, you're reminded about metta or dana or sila. You don't think, I want to have more calm, right?
And actually, what they are doing is not understanding and not kusala, because it's wrong.
So the second kind is
Nirantara Bhavana. The English translation provided by Jagrit is continuous developing of kusala. Would you say a little more?
The development of understanding shouldn't be just only once. But since all dhammas are anatta, not under one's control, by understanding this, there is no I who force or who try to have it all day. Impossible. So this means that not only this life, whatever life to come, no matter 100 lives ahead, not just next life, it doesn't matter at all, because one is well firmly established about anatta-ness. If there is the idea of atta, it's against the teachings, the truth. So that is why it's so very subtle. Take courage so great in order to really understand what is now. Not by just, I try to have awareness at all. So it does mean to have awareness continuously. It doesn't mean like that. But it means that no matter what life be at any time. Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, and actually it just means that when
there is firm confidence, firm understanding on the right way, no thought or idea at all about following a practice or doing anything or special place or special time, that understanding will condition more awareness of realities naturally, and it will develop of its own accord at its own timing, this lifetime or other lifetimes. So no thought or concern of how much or when or what result, because it's just the firm understanding that dharmas are conditioned, no one who can do anything at all. And it leads to more and more interest to hear more and more about the truth of realities, because one knows it's the condition for the development of understanding to continue.
No, just naturally hastening right understanding, because it's impossible. That's why it takes patience so great to just whatever is conditioned can be understood by conditions. That's why it takes a long, long time to eradicate completely ignorance and attachment and all akusala. Like now.
Actually, it's a little bit like the lifting of a great burden
when there's the idea of following a practice or trying to catch reality or focus, or life is so difficult and complicated. But when there's more understanding that dharmas are just conditioned, never mind where or when, or busy at work in Hong Kong or in Vietnam or swimming or any time, understanding can develop very naturally. So nothing to worry about or try to do or be concerned about results, or just whatever is conditioned arises and can be known when it's time.
Yes, And one begins to understand what is meant by being freed from being enslaved to attachment. It's much different from when one is enslaved. At that moment, no recognition of the master at all, because one is so used to follow what he lead us to different things in life. But at moment of feeling freed from being enslaved, it's quite different. Begin to be freed little by little.
And especially being freed from the attachment with wrong understanding or wrong view about what is the object of awareness, what can be understood, and no self that can understand or focus or be aware or do anything.
Right then, no doubt about this for right. Bhavana at all. Bhavana means the development, not by anyone but by conditions.
What is the literal meaning of Nirantara?
Forever.
Forever. And
the third one, Jira Gala Bhavana. Well, Jira Gala means long time bhavana, long time developing. So it refers to how it has to be developed for a long time. Is this just anything else?
Yeah, and the understanding of how long it takes before there can be direct understanding of what Buddha said. Now, seeing arises and falls away. If it's not true, no one can experience it. But since it's the absolute truth, right understanding can develop to that degree. Otherwise, there cannot be the eradication of the idea of I see at all. It's not through any method at all, but by developing understanding little by little. And the understanding is so true, is so keen, it does not deceive, that now one understands so great. Actually, it knows how very little, no matter how many times one hears about the truth, but it's still just very little, because how can anyone move the universe of ignorance away from that which is in the mind? It's so inside the citta, no one can take it away. Only panya begins to just touch it little by little until it's worn away completely. And this is the Buddha's teaching. So by then there can be the understanding of who's him, who's the enlightened one, and what he enlightened.
So it's a continual process, and this continual process is very, very long.
No doubt about the previous follower who had developed great understanding so that they could understand what Buddha taught instantly. Like now, when we have understood what Dhamma is, no doubt about when someone talk about Dhamma, we know what it is.
And no doubt that when we read a verse that
someone like Bahaya or
Sariputta
just listened to one or two lines and became enlightened, but no doubt that it took lifetimes and lifetimes, and because the Dhamma is so subtle, so there had to be hearing and considering for a very long period. Impossible just hear one or two lines out of the blue with ignorance and become enlightened.
And the fourth one,
Sakaccha Bhavana. What does Sakaccha mean? Respect.
To develop right understanding respectfully of each word that is so true from his great compassion, the Buddha's great compassion. Like Dhamma, see, just one word. When there is respect, it doesn't mean that now I understand Dhamma. That is not respect at all. But it's so very true and very difficult to understand from the superficial understanding up to the direct understanding at this very moment. Respect each word of the Buddha's teaching so true that it can condition right understanding from having less and less ignorance.
So it's true and very deep.
Mm-hmm. So study, hearing, considering with respect.
And the word sakaccha means with respect.
Right. So anyone who just think that I will meditate doesn't respect. The very deep, very true, very subtle word. Because it's not only word, but it's the absolute reality of each reality.
So it's like the understanding which leads to the Patisampadas that really understands the meaning and what exactly the word represents and the truth of the Buddha's teachings. So the more understanding, the more respect there is for each word or the meaning of each word.
But at the same time, sir, if there was not the respect, there wouldn't be the development of understanding also. So that respect has to have a beginning.
I think we have to. It develops together, because with no understanding, and one reads the book and one thinks one has respect because it's the Buddha's teaching or one's parents have told one to respect it, but actually no understanding cannot actually be respect for what is meant for, like the word nama. One thinks it's just a name or something. Yeah.
I think the development of the understanding itself is a condition for creating respect for the teachings. So, for great respect, and the more understanding one has, the greater the respect one would have for the teachings.
All these four
types of bhavana are intertwined and related, and they condition each other.
So one begins to see Buddha, who's him, the enlightenment, with great compassion, purity, and wisdom. So just pay homage to him. Is that enough? No understanding at all.
You would like to say about these four bhavana, or that's similar to the discussion?
Quite similar to Thanh Chan explained in Laos.
Yes.
And when I hear this again, it comes to me about the word that Chan always mentioned. In Thai, is na kala khang ning, once upon a time.
Yes.
So it's reflect on this bhavana. Exactly. So I understand more about this.
Can you explain? Because I don't understand.
Once upon a time.
What is it in Thai? Na kala khang ning.
Yes. This moment is once upon a time.
Like coming to Kwanayung, once upon a time. Each seeing once upon a time. Otherwise, it's just a story, each reality.
Just once.
Each seeing, each hearing.
I still haven't got it,
but
what did you say?
I still haven't quite got it, but I'll ask someone.
It's really, it's just like
this moment of seeing, yes. It arises, it falls away, will never ever come again,
right.
Once upon a time in samsara, the moment of seeing, hearing, this moment. Falls away completely, never again. So once upon a time in samsara. It's like when you talk about karma or something, you can talk about a conventional idea, but to be precise, it's about the reality only.
I'm also using like
once upon a time, we went to Gangajan, Dhamma discussion. Once upon a time, we came here, have Dhamma discussion. So you said as well.
And I was thinking,
but that's conventional thing.
Yes. Yeah, conventional.
It means once upon a time, there was one moment of understanding, yes. Another moment of understanding. Right?
That's why before listening to the teachings, we just talk about that we do not really understand. Like once upon a time, it's like a story.
A story about coming to this place and going to that
place. But when we study Dharma, we actually know this place or that place, just one citta.
Once upon a time of bhavana or understanding the effect on these four bhavana, because this is continuously
Each moment.
Each moment.